You can learn more at coronavirus.gov.
Produced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services at taxpayer expense.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Glad to be back with you this Friday afternoon. Susan McGraw and I are pleased to spend an hour with you each Friday afternoon looking at things going on around the HFC campus and in the cities of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. And in this case, to a polling place near you, I suppose. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Anyway, good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon, Alan. Lots of changes, lots of shaking up, lots of things that are very different, but some things never change, and that is the need and the responsibility of voting in our communities. So while we continue to celebrate big changes and victories and all that kind of stuff, both nationally as well as locally, the show must go on. And there are races that are happening, and some predetermined from other circumstances falling into place. This election is certainly one of those. And in the sort of the art of the knowledge of who should vote, why should I vote, what am I voting about, and what is my district anyway? You know, these are all the questions that I think are on people's minds right now.
You know, and a lot of people say, okay, you know, I vote once every 4 years, whatever. Yeah. But we know that our loyal listeners at WHFR, especially a lot of people who listen to the show, stay engaged and realize that this is an ongoing and a lifelong process to be able to be aware of before these people actually hold office that, you know, has impact on your life. Who they are, what they stand for, and what you think is right for yourself.
Yeah, you got it. Well, we've got a primary coming up right around the corner, first Tuesday in March, and we've got a forum that we're going to talk about in a little bit that we're excited to air on today's show. But we thought we'd start with, I think, a lady that has probably most of the answers, if not all of them, and that's Jennifer Oliver. And Jen is the president of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, celebrating their 70th anniversary as a chapter of this league, and the League of Women Voters nationally celebrating 102 years. So, you know, while Eleanor Roosevelt may or may not have been a league member, we know that a lot of very important people are helping to disseminate information that's useful as we make decisions before going to the polls. So, Jennifer, it's great to have you here again today. And what's the tone like with this upcoming March election?
Hi, Susan and Alan. Thank you again for having me on the show. It's great to see you again and talk to you again. The tone, I think, I think a lot of people have questions about why are they being called out to vote in March? What are they voting on? And how will this be different than what they might vote on in the fall? So yes, there is a primary election that will affect most of Dearborn, and that is the race for the partial term in the Michigan House. It'll be the 15th district representative, and that was the seat that was vacated on January 1st by Abdullah Hamoud as he took up the mantle as Dearborn's mayor.
So this starts to all make sense. Abdullah Hamoud elected mayor of Dearborn, partial term in the state legislature that still needs to be completed. But then, of course, being an even number year, there will be another state legislature election this fall. Now you see how this process works and why voters need to stay engaged. And obviously your work is a big part of that. So this forum, which at this point has already taken place, features how many candidates are on that ballot, and obviously several different political parties and things like that.
This forum actually involves candidates from two parties, and there are only two parties on the ballot, as you know, unless there is a write-in that I haven't been made aware of. We have two candidates running as Democratic candidates. That is Alabas Farhat and Jeffrey D. Pepper, and one Republican candidate, Ginger L. Shearer. Mr. Pepper was not able to participate in the forum. The other two candidates did participate, and I think we had a good dialogue with them.
Yeah, excellent. So important to not just listen to the sound bites that make it to the big headlines, or not just to read the, you know, the quote in the local paper, but to actually dig a little bit deeper. And that's the beauty of these forums, an opportunity to hear potentially qualified people sharing their opinions on very important issues. Oftentimes when we, even talking to students about how, you know, don't forget to get out there and vote, it's a primary or whatever. Well, it's not a presidential year, so why should I vote? And then when you try to explain to them, and you finally do, and then our political science people really bring it home that these are the elections that are impacting them on a daily basis, more than a presidential election even. It's, you know, hitting their local pocketbooks and all the decisions in terms of, you know, their communities and so on. Then they start to get it. Then it starts to make some sense. So while this is just a partial term, it is certainly still one that can be impactful in the daily lives of our, you know, Dearborn community, which is why the forum is important, which is why it's necessary to be engaged, as Alan mentioned. So, do you feel, Jennifer, that there is a good vibe about people going to the polls this time around? Do you, are you getting a lot of questions? Are you having many people just kind of saying, "Well, it's a partial term, so you know, no big deal." What's that going on right now?
I think right now we are really just trying to get the word out that there is an election. Maybe a lot of people aren't aware of that. Unusual to have one in March, and the candidates are. They haven't held office before, so their names aren't as familiar as maybe some of the other local political figures. So really, that's our goal, just to get people informed, to actually get people to fill out their ballots and send them back.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the big challenge here, I think.
It's so important, and likely has been the challenge for potentially 70 years for the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. And as you have been a member and now serving as president of the chapter, why do you see the value and the need for more people to get involved in grassroots efforts like these and in organizations like yours to help get the word out, even that there is an opportunity to cast, you know, flex your muscles and cast your ballot?
I think people sometimes feel disenfranchised about their role in the political process and whether they have a voice in government at all. We have a representative democracy, and I think it's really important to remind people of that. Especially at the local level, your vote matters, and you have more influence at the local level. You can meet your local politicians. You can go to city council meetings. You can interact with your state reps and your state senators. And, you know, your vote really can help direct how your dollars are spent in the state and in your community.
Well, and as we kind of try to, you know, allude to a little bit, it is a progression. At some point, the current mayor of Dearborn was elected probably in a primary election into a runoff election and to the state legislature. And now all of a sudden, I mean, not all of a sudden, it took a lot of work, the mayor of, you know, one of the largest cities in Michigan. So that's where it's important to get to know these people at this stage of the process and understand, again, what they stand for and how, and keep track of them in terms of how they're going to represent you. So now this is not necessarily one of the first elections. I think that's going to come later when it comes to the redistricting thing. And I know League of Women Voters, we've talked in the past about, you know, the voters, not politicians process and a new way of appropriating districts in the state of Michigan. From the league's perspective, how has that process gone? What have been lessons, what you think lessons that can be learned, or, you know, how do you think that's all worked out?
I think the residents of Michigan have been heard in the redistricting process, and we have final maps. I think that they've gotten a lot closer to being fair in terms of nonpartisan, non-biased maps. So it really remains to be seen how that will play out in the November elections, but I think it's a good start. You know, I think we've had a good first run at the independent citizens redistricting process.
So that's when we're going to see those districts, which we may have seen about in the news and other places, when we're going to see them actually in play, not necessarily for this primary in, next week or in the when this is a primary. So that means that we're going to have another go at it when in May, right?
In May, that's correct. Yes. And these, I believe, will be the last elections under the current districts. And then the new districts will take effect for the primary in August. So at that point, everything will change. Where you're voting now might not be where you're voting in August. you might not be in, you won't be in the same district. So that process will be interesting. We'll have to do a lot of education and a lot of advertising to make sure that people know what resources are available and, you know, where they can go to find out this information.
Well, as many times as you need to be on the WHFR Journal to put that information out, I got a feeling that that we might be able to make that work, because obviously it's been a great partnership for us, certainly over, you know, the last couple of years, in the time that Susan and I have been doing the show, to, you know, to be able to bring these voter forums, which are very educational, and obviously spread the mission of being involved in voting is certainly a recurring theme on the show, isn't it, Susan?
Yes, it is. And we are always looking for ways to share with our listeners opportunities to get answers to last minute questions, or if they want to do a lot of early research. League of Women Voters has been incredibly helpful and successful in doing that. The vote411.org is a good site to consider, vote411.org. In addition, I'd love checking out the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights website, because I like the pictures. You've got some really cool pictures on there, and I just love that. And the other thing I like about the website is there's so many opportunities to learn things that you never would have even considered thinking about as it relates to the election process and so on. Always looking for new members, I'm guessing, Jennifer, and should we send them to your website?
Of course, we always welcome new members.
LWVDDH.org, am I correct?
That is correct, LWVDDH.org.
All right. Jen Oliver, thanks for talking with us for a few minutes. Actually, we're going to let you scoot, because you're actually going to be back on the radio in just a few seconds, because you're going to introduce the voter forum that we're going to be hearing up next here on the WHFR Journal. Susan, let's grab a cup of coffee and sit back and listen to it. And Jen, we'll be hearing from you in just a moment. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Obviously, the program continues right now and here on WHFR, Making Waves.
Hello, and welcome to the League of Women Voters of Dearborn Heights Candidate Forum for the March 1st special primary election. This is a primary election for the 15th District State Representative, a partial term ending January 1st, 2023. The 15th District includes all of the city of Dearborn except three precincts. My name is Jennifer Oliver, and I am the president of the Local League. This program is presented and produced as a public service by the League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan national organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government. The League never supports or opposes candidates or political parties. Membership is open to everyone age 16 years or older. The League of Women Voters wants every eligible voter to inform themselves and to vote in the March 1st special primary election. Although all local precincts will be open on Election Day, please contact the Dearborn City Clerk's office for an absentee ballot if you prefer that option. Now, I am delighted to introduce the moderator of tonight's forum and a member of our local league, Leslie Windlass. Leslie?
Good evening, everyone. As always, the League of Women Voters is not responsible for the views expressed by the candidates. The candidates have agreed to the following plans. The first candidate to speak has been determined randomly. Thereafter, the order of responses will be rotated. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to make an opening statement and 1 minute to answer each question. We will end with each candidate having 1 minute to make a final statement. The questions were determined by a league committee convened for that purpose. If you have more questions, we encourage you to contact the candidates directly. The March 1st special primary election for the office of the 15th District State Representative will determine which candidates will win their party's nomination for their special general election on May 3rd. The candidates that are on the ballot are for the Democratic Party primary are Alabas Farhat, Jeffrey D. Pepper, and then for the Republican Party primary, Ginger Shear. The candidates have been asked to prepare a 2-minute opening statement. And tonight we will begin with Alabas Farhat.
Thank you so much, Leslie, and the entire League of Women Voters for putting this on. I think it's important that folks stay involved and they're accessible to the information that's out there. So thank you for doing that. It truly is a public service. I'm very fortunate to be in this position to run for state representative, to serve my fellow neighbors, and to be in a position to be an advocate for them in Lansing. Over the last few years, I've been very fortunate to work with Wayne County in government affairs and in special projects where I intimately saw how policies impact the lives of so many in our district. Whether it was my work with the vaccine outreach during the COVID-19, the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, or later on with my work with small business assistance and working with families and finding relief, whether it was rental assistance or utility funding, to make ends meet when the economy and our entire workforce was shut down. And during that time, I've learned a lot. And I hold a bachelor's in public health as well, and I'm working on finishing my master's in public policy. Using these two degrees, I think it's important that we remain public health focused. And all actions that we do, whether it's our infrastructure, ensuring that it's sustainable and that it's responsible, or it's in our environmental regulations, or even something as the way we respond to pandemics again in the future. I think it's critical that we continue to have these lens and that we continue to look at solutions that are sustainable for the long term, not just in the next 10 years, the next 20 and 30 years. The state of Michigan is in an amazing position to step forward into the 21st century, sitting on nearly a $20 billion surplus. It'll be a priority for me on day one to ensure that the money gets put and allocated in the correct areas. That means our public schools and reinvesting in our teachers and in the physical infrastructure of our buildings, investing in our infrastructure to sustain the next large automotive boom for electrical vehicles, as well as preventing things like flooding in the homes of basements that have been impacted. And most importantly, we can safeguard our environment and start remediating the damage done from PFAS and corporate polluters. And I'd be honored to remain active and accessible throughout this, not just this campaign, hopefully elected as a state representative.
Oh, that's fine.
Thank you so much, all of us. We appreciate that. Unfortunately, our other Democratic candidate, Jeffrey Pepper, was not able to be with us tonight. So our next candidate to give their opening statement will be our Republican candidate, Ginger Shearer.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Ginger L. Shearer. I'm delighted to be here tonight, and I would like to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this forum. I am running for state representative for District 15, and I would like to ask the voters to consider me as their candidate for the March 1st special election. All three candidates are qualified for state representative, but if you're looking to vote a certain way, given the circumstances of the pandemic, I'm the only one who is a single mom and understands what all of our households from every single standpoint have gone through and are going through during this challenging time. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up in Flat Rock. I graduated from Flat Rock High School. I obtained a nursing assistant certificate through the state of Michigan. As a young woman, I moved to Dearborn in 1998. And this has been my home ever since. Ultimately, I chose a fast-paced, exciting career in the wholesale produce industry in Eastern Market, where I worked for 30 years. In 2021, as a office and operations manager, I retired. This has given me an opportunity to represent Dearborn and working moms everywhere in our state capital. So if you're wondering why I'm running for state representative, I was once told a woman's place is in the House, and I say a woman's place is in the Michigan State House of Representatives. I am Ginger L. Shearer, asking you to vote for me, state representative for District 15. I am your candidate to keep our children in school learning, lower property taxes, and make sure Lansing dollars go directly to our Dearborn community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shearer. Now we will begin with the questions. All candidates will be given 1 minute to answer each question. So because we started with Candidate Farhat the last time, we will start with Candidate Shearer for the first question. So the first question is, how would you prepare to hit the ground running given the limited duration of this partial term?
There are so many areas that we need to focus on, but what I really want to focus on is our infrastructure and the flooding that happens in the city. There are actually two that I really want to focus on. Our schools, our students, stay in school learning. I'm sorry. there are many that we need to focus on, but I think the two are education for our children and staying in school learning, and our infrastructure. You know, we have the flooding issue that have affected many of our neighborhoods. And I think this is something that many people are concerned about. So those two things. And the third thing would be lower property taxes. So there are many things that we need to focus on, but these are my main concerns. And these are what most people that I've spoke to have said to me. So those are the things that I'd like to focus on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Candidate Shearer. Our next candidate, Candidate Farhat, the same question will apply to you. How would you prepare to hit the ground running given the limited duration of this partial term?
It's a great question. You know, for me, I'm thankful to have some experience in Lansing when I entered into the State House, as well as my most relevant experience in Wayne County. So I know what goes on in the legislature, and I've been involved with a lot of the bills and appropriations as they've been happening and evolving. Currently, my first focus would be to restructuring the office in Lansing. Make it more customer service centered. Make it somewhere where if residents call, we're able to direct them to the resources and assistance they need, whether it's navigating the red tape of government and in the State House and making it easier to find relief or navigating grant applications. Let's help them. Let's do that. Let's show them how we can make bring resources directly to them. The second thing I would look to is the budget. The budget gets done in September. And when that gets done, I would want to look to using that surplus to invest in our teachers and our personnel. Let's increase per pupil spending. That's the school's cash flow. Let's not do one time for our schools. Let's give them sustainable funding. And let's also look to address our infrastructure and take it head on. Let's use this money to be aggressive and investing in the solutions of the 21st century and solutions that are going to help safeguard our city for generations as it continues to grow. So our infrastructure can grow with it and our city can
grow.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. In the spirit of rotating, it does go back to you for the next question. So I'll read it slow to give you a little bit more time, but it is a two-part question. So I'm going to stop at the end of the first question and then read the second one. So the first part of our two-part question is, what are your priorities for the current legislative session? The second question is, what issues specific to Dearborn do you hope to advocate for while in Lansing? I'll read it one more time all the way through so there's no break. So what are your priorities for the current legislative session? And what issues specific to Dearborn do you hope to advocate for while you're in Lansing?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, my basement, I'll be honest, flooded, and I had to gut my basement, my parents' basement, my grandparents' basement, and it was not fun. So I think talking to voters, that's the biggest issue. Everyone's wondering, how are we going to prevent the next flood? How are we going to allow our infrastructure to adapt to and change as our environment continues to change? And so that'd be what I take on first. And that's both my priority in this current legislative session, as well as what I would hope to accomplish for Dearborn Alliance. You know, right now in D.C., we're seeing that the bipartisan infrastructure bill is looking to potentially being passed and unprecedented spending coming to our infrastructure. Let's spend it responsibly. Let's have responsible contracting practices and try and bring and employ those jobs and those unions these trade unions that are in Dearborn to be the ones that are doing the work. And let's also look to building sustainable, I can't say this, a green infrastructure. Let's talk about how many inches of water are absorbed per square foot of new pavement or of new concrete. Let's look at being aggressive and building and being the leader in the electric vehicle boom. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. Next, we will go to Candidate Shearer, and I'm going to ask the question again, just so you have it. What are your priorities for the current legislative session, and what issues specific to Dearborn do you hope to advocate for while you're in Lansing?
That's a great question. I'd like to bring the dollars from Lansing that go directly to the Dearborn communities. Instead of some of the unproven programs that they currently go to, I would like to focus on the infrastructure and flooding. We keep repeating the same thing, but it is really an important issue that we are all concerned about. including myself. I've flooded multiple times and I've gutted my basement as a single mother myself. And so, yes, this is something that we really need to focus on. And again, bring the dollars from Lansing to go directly to our communities to fix these issues. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shearer. I am going to come back to you for the next question to follow our order of rotation. This one is also a two-part question, so I'll do it the same way I did it last time. I'll read each question individually and then the question as a whole. So what actions or policies do you support to protect Michigan's water, air, and land for current and future generations? That's one question. The second question is, can you address specific issues such as PFAS and lead in our water supplies and pipeline 5? So now I'm going to read the question as a whole all the way through. What actions or policies do you support to protect Michigan's water, air, and land for current and future generations? Can you address specific issues such as PFAS and lead in our water supplies and pipeline 5?
Well, protecting the Great Lakes and Michigan water systems must continue to be one of our top priorities. That was one of your questions that you sent out in the questionnaire, and I will continue to fight for clean air in Dearborn and in Michigan, specifically focusing on South Dearborn to clean up the air and the noise and the traffic pollution. The quality of life for Dearborn residents must improve. Regarding the PFAS, lead, this is something that is a big concern, even more so recently in our local communities. I know that Flint had an issue and many other communities, but they're now speaking about it in our community and Dearborn Heights and several others. And this is serious. This is the health of all of our families. So we must protect.
About that time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shearer. That same two questions is going to move over to Candidate Farhat, and I'm going to reread them for you. What actions or policies do you support to protect Michigan's water, air, and land for current and future generations? And can you address specific issues such as PFAS and lead in our water supplies and pipeline 5?
Amazing question. You know, I'll tell you, our Great Lakes are a national treasure. We have the largest body of fresh water almost anywhere in the world. And they deserve protecting. And we have to be more aggressive in how we protect them. PFAS is known as the forever chemical. And it was found to be in the water at AK Steel, now Cleveland Cliffs, and for the Fort Rouge plant. We have to be aggressive in how we combat it. Because the long-term impacts on the life expectancies and the health outcomes of individuals are still unclear. When it comes to lead pipes, we also have to look at what funding is coming down from the Build Back Better or bipartisan infrastructure bill and appropriate it as quickly as possible to getting these lead pipes out of municipalities. We have to be aggressive and we have to be proactive. We have to also pivot to looking at lead in homes and doing so by partnering up with municipalities and using some of this one-time spending to address the lead crisis that we're facing. Our Great Lakes deserves to be protected. And we have to look at doing that by also ensuring that corporations like Nestle and those that bottle our water are paying their fair share for the amount of water that they're taking out of our Great Lakes to be invested in sustainable standards.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. To keep going on to that topic, our next question is still along that same line. So how could your role in the legislature help address local environmental issues important to Dearborn residents, such as air quality, flooding, public transportation, and green infrastructure?
That's a great question. As a legislator, I'll tell you, I watched firsthand how then-State Rep. Hamoud would advocate, organize, and mobilize the community around whether it was permits for additional pollution requirements like in 2018 and in 2016. I would continue in that same vein, being active and being a partner in the community, being there, being unafraid to call on the state to do more, and being unafraid to call on the corporations in this region and in our city to step up and to invest in technology that reduces their carbon output. That's the first way I would do it. The second way in the state's legislature is looking at that one-time spending. Let's figure out how we can add more green space into our city, more walkways. Let's connect East and West Dearborn. Let's find a way to do that to where you don't need a car necessarily to go everywhere. We can do that using the one-time spending. Addressing our flooding, that takes, again, we have to talk about amount of rainwater absorption per square foot. And we can do that through things like permeable pavers, building retention basins, and even creating grants and opportunities for families and homes to create their own rain gardens, which can help with water absorption in their properties tremendously.
Can I stop that time?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. The same question is going to be asked to Candidate Shearer. How could your role in the legislature help address local environmental issues important to Dearborn residents, such as air quality, flooding, public transportation, and green infrastructure?
Well, the quality of life and the health of Dearborn residents must improve. Unlawful pollution needs to be eliminated with strict enforcement. We must embrace renewable and carbon neutral energy. Economic incentives will help manufacturers like Ford Motor Company transition to alternative fuel sources for vehicles. Michigan's natural resources and state parks must be protected for our families and the future. Infrastructure funding must be delivered to Dearborn to provide the necessary improvements to the city's aging sewer system, increasing capacity. For our sewer systems, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Candidate Shearer. We're moving to the next question, and it's going to start with you. So what state policies do you support regarding Michigan voters' rights and access? For example, do you support mailing ballots to all eligible voters and the current voter ID laws?
Well, we need to create policies that will increase voter awareness, turnout, and accessibility. Campaign funding must be modified to allow all candidates for public office an opportunity to serve and lead based, and and not simply to raise campaign money. Additional audits and updates for eligible voter registration records must be completed to maintain a high level of confidence in the election results. More funding must be provided at the local level to continuously improve the election process, train election workers, update election equipment, and improve the election system. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. That same question is going to be asked to Candidate Farhat, and it is, what state policies do you support regarding Michigan voters' rights and access? For example, do you support mailing ballots to all eligible voters and the current voter ID laws?
Great question. I think that we can look at models of states like Florida and Colorado on how they mail their ballots and maintain secure elections. I think our voter ID laws in Michigan are pretty robust. I will say this, though, our poll workers, we should put an emphasis on poll workers, increasing bilingual accessibility and making it more accessible when first-time voters or voters who may have a language barrier go to vote. Let's make it easier for them when they go in there. I think Michigan has some very strong voter ID laws. I was actually at TCF in the 2020 election for over 48 hours as a challenger there, just watching the process unfold as a Democratic challenger, watching it unfold and ensuring that every vote was properly counted without delay. I can tell you, our poll workers, though, are some of the hardest working people anywhere. There was a thankless job. They had one shift change, actually, and they went nonstop. The process was transparent enough where everyone was able to watch. Everyone was able to be there literally as they were counting the ballots. And I think our state has very robust laws that maintain the integrity and the spirit of what the Constitution and what voting rights means. But we can look at being more forward-looking by looking at states like Colorado and Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. And the next question is going right back to you. Yes, the next question is, I had lost track for a second there, but the next question is going right back to you. And it is, how can the legislature protect election administrators and poll workers from intimidation and threats of violence?
Yeah, great question. That has a lot to do with enshrining protections for things like firearms at polling places. Let's make sure that there's no instance of voter intimidation that's possible. Let's make sure that our laws, enshrine the protections we are already assume are given. Again, I go back to firearm safety within polling places. And we can also look at things, again, by increasing emphasis on mail-in ballots and early voting. We take pressures off of long lines. Now, I've been there at City Hall in Dearborn where I saw 10, 20, 30, 100 people nearly in 2018 in line after 8 o'clock waiting to vote. Let's put an emphasis. Let's make it easier to vote early. Let's bring awareness to how we can request ballots. And let's even look at mail-in ballot initiatives like Colorado and Florida have. Doing that helps increase protection by taking pressure off the day of voting. Additionally, again, we look at firearm regulations at polling precincts. We look at campaigning regulations and reforms at precincts. And we ensure that our poll workers are adequately prepared for if you do get one or two individuals who may have come in with an intention that is less than in the spirit of our
Constitution. Stop that time. Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. Next, we're going to move to Candidate Shearer. And it's the same question, which is, how can the legislature protect election administrators and poll workers from intimidation and threats of violence?
Well, that's a great question. I think that we could protect our poll workers by increasing security and having police present. That could be helpful. I also think mail-in ballots would be a great option for many people. It would decrease lines. It would also require less poll workers. I think that police protection, though, could really help poll workers if people do want to get out and vote. I think that that would be something to consider. I think the safety of all people is extremely important. And I think that, you know, the right for all of us to get out and vote and all of our poll workers putting all of their time and effort into helping us through this process. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shearer. The next question is going to start with you, Candidate Shearer. And the question is, the Citizens United decision has changed the face and cost of political elections. What is your position on issues of campaign finance reform, such as transparency and the public financing of elections?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
The Citizens United decision has changed the face and the cost of political elections. What is your position on issues of campaign finance reform, such as transparency and the public financing of elections?
I don't know a lot about that. I need to study that. Again, I'm not a politician. I'm a single mom, but this is something that I definitely need to look into and need to learn more about. So that would be something that I need to study more to have an answer for you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shearer. The same question is going to be asked to Candidate Farhat. The Citizens United decision has changed the face and the cost of political elections. What is your position on issues of campaign finance reform, such as transparency and public financing of elections?
It's a very important question. I think there's too much money in our politics. I think the ruling of Citizens United only allowed more money to flow in and decreased the amount of transparency and accountability there was to big donors and even corporate donors. I think we need to look at being more forward-thinking in our policies and increase the way that we're reporting campaign finance contributions and maybe even looking at the way we cap corporation contributions broadly. The decision was made at the federal level, but as a state legislator, I'd look to either bring in some kind of regulations for our own campaign finance or lobbying dip hard for our federal partners to bring reform at the federal level. Additionally, I think public-funded elections and public finance is a great idea. We make elections more accessible that way, and we help stop the ability to pay. We give her the ability to pay in our corporation and our public elections. We make it easier and more accessible for regular everyday folks to run for office, to pursue the ability to hold a chair, whether it's city council or state rep or even governor. Let's look at publicly funded elections, the same way New York does, where it's 8-1 or other states.
Stop that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. The next question is going to start with you, Candidate Farhat. And it is, how would you work toward an equitable funding for, how would you work toward the equitable funding of schools in Michigan? And what is your position on the use of public funding to support charter and private schools?
Amazing question. I'll tell you, actually, not too long ago, our campaign team and I, we put forward our education platform and policy on our website. So you go to votefarhat.com, under the platform page, you'll be able to see our full education policy platform. And one of the biggest things we'll look at doing is addressing per pupil funding. The first way we look to do that is by stopping funds from the school aid fund at the state level from being transferred out, whether it's for tax credits and tax incentives as it currently is, and stopping that. And that would increase per pupil funding tremendously. And that's more money for personnel, for staff, for benefits, for pensions. And it's also more money for infrastructure and other investments that each district can make on their own. You know, we forget our per pupil funding, that's the school's cash flow. That's what they count on every year when they're making the budget. And that's one of the biggest ways we plan on doing that. Additionally, when we look at the way our schools are publicly funded, we can also look and consider how it is and by what means are we is each school expected to deliver at? Certain schools are in more difficult areas, and we have to consider that in addition.
Stop that time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. We're going to move to Candidate Shear with the same question, which is, how would you work toward the equitable funding of schools in Michigan? And what is your position on the use of public funding to support charter and private schools?
The use of public funding for charter and private schools. I think public funding of K through 12 education should be our highest priority in our state's budget. All children, especially those with disabilities, must have an opportunity in the education system to achieve their goals. I will fight to expand programs for students with physical and mental challenges, reduce classroom sizes, and provide educators with required resources, technology, security, so we can deliver world-class education in all of our schools. I will fight to help create the very best education system possible with each child. Each child deserves this in our community. As far as public, private, charter schools, I think they all deserve the best education.
And stop that time.
Thank you so much, Candidate Shear. And the next question is going to start with you, Candidate Shear. And it is, how should Michigan meet long-term revenue needs to handle funding for K-12 and higher education, roads and transportation, public health, prisons, local government revenue sharing, and other state expenses?
Wow. That's a good question. We have a big problem with our budget in Michigan. We all know that. It's something that we need to really focus on, fixing this budget. I don't know what the solution is. I'm not there yet, but when I get there, I hope to change all of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shear. That same question, which was a mouthful, is going to be asked to Candidate Farhat, which is, how should Michigan meet long-term revenue needs to handle funding for K-12 and higher education, roads and transportation, public health, prisons, local government revenue sharing, and other state expenses?
And it's definitely a loaded question, but I'll try and break it up and answer as best I can. To address how we fund our K-12 and higher ed, let's look again. Let's keep money in the school aid fund and spend it for what we're raising it for. Let's spend it for our schools. Let's keep it in that sector. It's about $600 million a year we take out of the school aid fund, these kind of expenditures. The school aid fund's up about $1.2 billion from last year. Let's spend that money aggressively and proactively to bring teachers back to the profession. Our general fund is up about $2.2 billion as well. It is only expected to grow. But all that means is nothing if we don't spend it responsibly. And that's what we have to do. We have to look at spending in sustainable ways that help continue the growth and the prosperity of our state. investing in infrastructure that can support the economy of tomorrow today, looking at investing in roads and transportation ways that can support EVs for long-distance traveling, and as well as looking at taxing trucks for the weight and size of their load is critical. They use our roads the hardest, and they hit them the hardest. Let's try and tax and capture revenue that way instead of looking at the gas tax, for example. I think that's one of the many ways to address that question. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. So the next question is going to go to you, Candidate Farhat, and it is not as loaded as the last one. What measures would you take to help alleviate gun violence in Michigan, especially given the recent violence at the Capitol as well as in schools?
Yeah, so that's a question that hits home for me for a lot of reasons. You know, when I was in middle school at Woodworth, I remember being on lockdown for 6 hours because there was an active shooter boarded up in his home nearby the school. You know, I know what that felt like for a while to be, and thankfully no one was hurt, but that memory still lingers with me and some of my friends. So the first thing we have to do is addressing those who are in mental health need and who have mental health issues. We have to look at helping them and offering support for them. If you're buying a gun, I'm all for responsible gun ownership. The Second Amendment is, you know, a very important amendment, but we have to look at doing it responsibly. As someone who, you know, cares for the ability and accessibility of people, we have to have sensible background checks that also look at mental health screenings, as well as looking at offering social support and social workers in our schools, making sure there's resources for students and those at risk to find the help they need when they need it. Additionally, when we talk about gun violence, we have to do a better job educating on gun safety as well, how to properly store and lock up our guns, and how to properly insure and report a gun missing. You know, illegal gun ownership is also something we have to consider as we look to addressing the gun. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. The next question is for Candidate Shearer, which is the same question we just asked the Candidate Farhat. What measures would you take to help alleviate gun violence in Michigan, especially given the recent violence at the Capitol as well as in schools?
Well, thank you. Law enforcement at the local level needs state funding to remove illegal weapons from criminals and individuals that are not eligible to possess guns. Training, education, technology, and other resources need to be available to keep illegal weapons and guns out of our neighborhoods. I think that education is probably the top, educating people. I think that's extremely important regarding gun and violence. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. The next question is going to go to you, Candidate Shearer, and it is a new question, which is, given recent legal challenges to Roe v. Wade, what state legislation would you support regarding reproductive rights?
Oh, this is, I think this is a very private matter for women, and I think it should be kept that way. I think it should be between a woman and her doctor. And that's a pretty bold statement, but I do believe that it's a very private matter for each individual woman. And I think that they should have a choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. That same question is now going to be asked to Candidate Farhat, which is, given recent legal challenges to Roe v. Wade, what state legislation would you support regarding reproductive rights?
Yeah, so Michigan is one of those states that has a provision for if Roe v. Wade should be appealed, an automatic abortion restriction would be enacted automatically. That was passed not too long, a couple years ago prior to the current governorship. In Lansing, again, I agree. I think it's a woman's right more for them to choose and make that decision. And we had to look at making sure our laws enshrine that right and protection. No one should be criminalized for making a decision about her health. Obviously, we have to make sure we do education, and I think it's important we also talk about sexual education and awareness about unprotected sex and things like that, not only to curb the potential of a childbirth that's unexpected, but also to help mitigate STDs and STI transmission. But I ultimately believe this is a decision of a woman to make. It's her decision to make. And as the government, it's not our right and our duty to be in between the physician and the patient.
And stop that time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. The next question will go to you, Candidate Farhat, and it is, Would you support legislation allowing undocumented residents to obtain state driver's license and ID cards? Why or why not?
Great question. I think this, so this question is part of a larger national conversation I think we've been having as well. But I'd look at ways to empower the federal government to create a pathway for citizenship for those that are here. But ultimately, yeah, I do believe we should be able to have a way to give them state IDs and driver's licenses. It's important that we make sure that while they're here, they're at least able to function and operate. And it's also easier for us to keep record of who it is that's in our state and how we're able to keep a track of that. You know, a driver's license is important to getting around. It's important to making sure someone can go from point A to B. And our undocumented immigrants are an important part of our economy. We would look at a way of creating a sensible pathway for citizenship that can bring them into, give them all the rights that a regular citizen has, because they're already contributing in many ways, whether it's in the workforce or paying their taxes. We have to create that pathway. We have to be able to ensure that they can get the full rights provided to them as a citizen. But I think a driver's license is important, at least helping them continue to function and operate within our society and our country and our state.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. The same question is going to be asked to you, Candidate Shear, which is, would you support legislation allowing undocumented residents to obtain state driver's license and ID cards? Why or why not?
This is something I have not studied. Just thinking about it off the top of my head, it doesn't seem like a great idea. But if this is something that people want in our community, if that's something that they want to focus on, when I'm elected, I will put forth all my efforts and study and deliver results that our residents deserve. But off the top of my head, no, I don't agree with that at this very moment. But again, it's something that I have not studied and I don't have all the data on it. If that's something that the community wants to focus on, again, I will definitely put forth all my efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. The next question is going to be to you, Candidate Shearer. And the question is, if elected to the state legislature, would you be willing to declare your financial interests in writing annually and announce conflicts of interest before you vote? Why or why not?
Yes, I think that transparency across the board is extremely important for voters to have confidence in their elected officials. I don't have anything to hide. So, yes, I wouldn't have any disagreement with that if that's what everyone wanted to see my financials.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. That same question is going to be asked to Candidate Farhat, which is, if elected to the state legislature, would you be willing to declare your financial interest in writing annually and announce conflicts of interest before you vote? Why or why not?
So I think it's important to lead by example. And if we're looking and calling on other elected officials to be more transparent in their operations and proceedings, we have to do that in what we control, and that's, in this case, myself. So, of course, I would want to be clear where my conflicts or financial interests may be. Although I'll tell you, they may not, they are far and few, if any, that exist. And that's part of why I'm so confident and so excited about running. Because truly, in everything and every aspect of how I'm running this campaign, I want to model it after how I plan on and I'm leading in Lansing. You know, my cell phone number is on every mailer sent out. I give it to everyone who I knocked to. When we were knocking doors or making calls, I use my personal cell phone. I want to be accessible. I want folks to, if they have a question or they're wondering how I might vote, where I'm at on a policy or where my values are, call me. Pick up the phone, call me. I'm excited to have that conversation. My hope is to be an accessible public servant, one who's active, one who you can rely upon, and one who you know is solution-oriented and will deliver for the community and for the city broadly. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. The next question is going to be asked to you, Candidate Farhat, which is, please explain where you see an opportunity for legislators of all political parties to find common ground on very serious issues facing our state.
This is a great question. And I hate to go back to it, but I think there's really only a handful of many, a handful that we can find commonality on off the top of my head is our public schools. Let's talk about investing and bringing school back in. We have an unprecedented number of turnover within that profession. Additionally, let's look at addressing and tackling our infrastructure. Let's continue to be the automotive capital and the automotive leader of the world. And that starts by making investments into infrastructure. When we look at why Ford opened their battery plant in Tennessee instead of Michigan, one of the many reasons they cited was the cost per kilowatt hour in Michigan. It's too expensive. Our electricity is too expensive here. We have to look at making investments and bringing that cost down so we can be a leader in that space. And so corporations will look to build and invest in the state. And moreover, our environment. Let's safeguard our Great Lakes. They are a national resource. They're one of the biggest points of pride for our state. Let's protect them and continue to have clean drinking water and breathable air free of pollutants, free of toxins. The crisis at Flint and in Benton Harbor with lead pipes should not be allowed to happen. Again, we have to be proactive.
Can you stop that time?
Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Farhat. The next question, that same question is going to be asked to you, Candidate Shearer, which is, please explain where you see an opportunity for legislators of all political parties to find common ground on the very serious issues facing our state.
Well, there are many, obviously. I will continue to support legislation that will protect Michigan residents living in poverty. I will fight to update laws and programs and services for each resident without discrimination. In Dearborn, we must continue to embrace change, progressive thinking, and policies that are inclusive to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shearer. And the last question, we're at the end already, so much fun. The last question is, do you plan to run for election in the fall of 2022? That will be for you, Candidate Shearer.
Yes, I've already registered, even though some of the newspapers had reported that no one had registered. I already did that the same day that I signed up for this special election. So yes, I intend to run.
It's awesome here. That same question will be asked to you, Candidate Farhat, which is, do you plan to run for election in the fall of 2022?
I do. I very much intend on ensuring the residents have continuity in Lansing. They have somebody who they know is dedicated. They know that is reliable. And then they'll have somebody there who's going to be building the repertoire and the relationships needed in Lansing. You know, I'm thankful to have, you know, folks that I know up there already, but continuing to build and continuing to be an advocate and ally up there can only help bring more wins for our city and for our community broadly. So I definitely look forward to running in the fall and would be excited to continue serving the residents.
Thank you so much, Candidate Farhat. On behalf of the League of Women Voters of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights and the communities that we serve, we want to thank the candidates for participating in this forum. We appreciate the commitment it takes to run for office, and we would like to thank you for seeking to serve. To the voters, please remember to vote. The polls will open on Tuesday, March 1st from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Absentee ballots are available from the city clerk's office for any reason. In-person voting in the city clerk's office has already begun. It is possible to visit the clerk's office during office hours to request an absentee ballot, vote it in the office, and turn it in all in one visit. Visit 411.org and michigan.gov/vote for additional information about the candidates on your ballot. We will now allow each candidate to do closing statements. We're going to start with Candidate Farhat.
Thank you so much for holding this forum again. Really, I do believe it's a public service, and I think so many people will benefit from having the opportunity to engage with my fellow candidates. And also thank you to my fellow candidates for being here. Ginger, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to share thoughts and occupy the same space. I'll say this, I'm excited. I look forward to being a leader in Lansing who's going to hit the ground running on day one. I know for a fact, and I'm confident in saying that our team will be one of the only, if not the only team that has policies rolled out by election day. You'll see where we stand on infrastructure, public health, and education. And we'll continue to remain accessible. If you go to votefarhat.com, you'll see the contact page where you'll see my personal cell phone. Give me a call, reach out. I'd love to have a conversation. I'm proud to also share that my campaign has been endorsed by the working labor unions of this district and of the city of Dearborn. We today actually proud to share, gained the endorsement of the American Federation of Teachers. You know, our public school and our educators are confident in standing behind us and our platform. And I'm very proud of that. Thank you so much. Remember to vote March 1st.
Thank you so much, Candidate Varhat. Next, we'll have our closing statements from Candidate Shearer.
I am Ginger L. Shearer. I will represent you and your family with honesty and integrity and strong values. So please, when you get out and vote, cast your ballot. I ask that you vote for me, Ginger L. Shearer, for state representative. Thank you to everyone for your time and consideration.
And on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, I want to thank you again for viewing our forum tonight, and we hope to see you at the next one.
Thank you.
Take care.
Wrapping up today's edition of the WHFR Journal, as always, we thank the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and Jen Oliver, their president, for joining us earlier in today's program. We hope to see you at the polls on Tuesday in the city of Dearborn. This is WHFR Dearborn at 89.3, online at WHFR.fm. Kitty Love is up next, taking us on a trip down Highway 61. Some blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR, Making Waves. Henry Ford College is awarding about 300 scholarships worth more than $300,000 for the 2022-23 school year. To be eligible, you must be enrolled at HFC for 6 credits or more and should fill out your FAFSA form. Scholarships can help pay for your education and do not have to be repaid. The deadline to complete the application is March 31st. For more information, email scholarships@hfcc.edu or visit hfcc.edu and search scholarships.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.